nuts over that. And it actually, it gives them, as you're saying, an outlet.
Yes, you are spot on with that. And so what we know is that if you can create a sniffing game at home or out on your walk, it's going to be mentally challenging. You don't need any special product to that. You might have a little bit of leftovers from your dinner or little treats you might have got made for your dog, and you can hide them around the house, and they can chase them out and find them, or sniff them out and find them. And that is so good for them. Also, if you want to just have like a simple toy exercise with them, you don't need to go and buy a toy. I mean, Westpaw toys would be readily available, but all you have to do is on a mat on the floor is spread out their food, give their kibble or their freeze-dried food a little bit more surface area. And if you want, put some obstacles in there. Maybe put a couple bowls that they can't break in their hiding stuff that they have to flip over. Any of that where they have a bit of a mat to feed off is going to give them that chance to like forage for their food. And that's really healthy for them too. And it's actually playtime.
He's the founder and CEO of Westpaw, Spencer Williams. Spencer, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Such a pleasure, Alex. Thank you for your time.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Charlie Hunter, Bob Dylan, Fog Swamp, and Rusty Kershaw. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Pacific University, allowing students to explore music, theater, and dance in a close-knit environment with hands-on opportunities that connect passion with purpose. Featuring guidance from faculty and guest artists along with pre-performance experiences. More information and upcoming performance calendar at pacificu.edu/arts.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. This week, I'm giving you 10 things you need to know about the Portland Art Museum reopening, which happens on November 20th. Number one, it's a complete remodel and rehang. The most obvious and quite stunning change, if you haven't been down to the Portland Art Museum for a while, is the addition of the Mark Rothko Pavilion. It's a glass box that connects the two older buildings, the Belushi and the old Mark building, and it also functions as a large lobby and contains the new cafe and gift shop, and on the higher level has its own gallery space. And then within the museum, they have added 100,000 square feet of new gallery space. For example, off the old European collection, you come into a whole new room that didn't exist before. Or maybe upon the second floor of the Mark building, what used to be the Krumpacker Library, traditional old library, has completely gone and is now a video installation space. And the first year will be holding a piece by Swiss artist Pipolotti Rist. I always like to enter through the gift shop in big museums because it shows you what they're most proud of, also what they can best monetize. And the new gift shop is bigger and more fancy. I suppose they're all pretty fancy these days, but it's a place where you can buy, you know, shawls and scarves, prints, calendars, knickknacks, things branded with the museum. There's a hoodie that makes the Mark Rothko Pavilion look like Frank Lloyd Wright's Falling Water. And it's connected to the cafe. The old cafe used to be a little food hutch, and now it's got food by Providor, which means it's not very cheap, but it's very good food. And they have a cake that looks like a Rothko painting, and it's $10 a slice. The effect of the expansion, though, is they can now show 300 new acquisitions and show off some of the things that were in storage. So you better plan a bit more time for wandering around the museum now, because it's a lot bigger than it used to be. Number two, ticket prices have gone up. Tickets are now $27.50 for an adult for the day, and that compares with MoMA in New York, which is $30, SF MoMA in San Francisco, which is also $30, and the LA County Museum of Art, which is also $30 for non-residents. All these museums have discounts for youth and seniors, and in Portland, if you qualify as a low-income resident, you can sometimes get in for just $5 at Portland Art Museum. It might be worth joining as a member, because for $90 a year, it's the equivalent of about 3 visits. They also have dual memberships for $129 and friend membership for $179. So it costs more, but there's more to see. Number three, the Mark Rothko Pavilion. So the glass box itself was designed by two architectural companies, Vinci Ham and Henneberry Eddy. And at the preview, the architects talked about how they wanted to create a people-centered approach. So you don't get lost, you know where you are, you feel comfortable, it's easy to get tickets, easy to find the bathrooms. It's bright, airy space with huge windows, apparently the same kind of thick, tall glass they use on an Apple store. And this glass box has entrances on the 10th Avenue side and the Park Block side. The floor is stone, and it's the same outside and in. As the architect pointed out, you don't have to feel bad when you walk in with wet boots, because it's the same material. There are couches, and it's just a generally comfortable space. And the Rothko Pavilion, of course, is named for the painter Mark Rothko, and his kids are loaning several paintings to the museum for the foreseeable future. Currently, there are a few on display in a special Mark Rothko exhibit. Number four, the Modern and Contemporary Rehang. So several galleries have been closed for the last couple of years, and some were open. On November 20th, you get to see everything open again. And one of the biggest changes is the Modern and Contemporary wing, which is in what they used to call the Mark Building. That's been rehung. And I talked to the curator, Sarah Krajewski, about the changes.
Sarah Krajewski, Senior Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the Portland Art Museum. Yes, one of the most exciting things as the Curator of Contemporary Art, for me, the visitors can enter our new lobby space, the pavilion, and then go directly to the North Wing, which is our Modern and Contemporary Galleries, all four levels. So it is much more accessible, and I think visitors will find these spaces much more readily, and will be able to experience the depth and breadth of our collection in ways they haven't in the past, when those spaces were a little bit harder to find. So
we're in MO5, and the Dan Flavin, the old strip lights, are gone. So it's kind of disorienting, but the feel is the same. The staircase is the same. And you just have a lot of new acquisitions.
Yeah.
Just tell us about a couple of them right here.
Sure. So I did kind of shuffle the deck of the contemporary wing. The Dan Flavin is in a new spot up on the third floor. So that's a visitor favorite that is still available. But here on this level, these galleries are much more of a nice volume for large scale works like the Simone Lee Sentinel 4 Gold, new acquisition by this quite renowned black artist. It's a beautiful sculpture of a figure with a kind of round, open head and indicating a kind of watchful presence over the gallery. And to the right of us is Fred Wilson's beautiful black glass mirror called I Saw Othello's Visage in His Mind.
And it looks like seven or eight black frames, very decorative, piled on top of one another. The final surface is a polished glass.
This work reflects on the history of Venetian glassblowing as well as a reference to Shakespeare's tragedy and a consideration of the integrity of one's character, not just a judgment, a surface judgment of the judgment of one's skin. So it's layers of black polished glass. Some are highly decorative and very ornate, like you'd see in a royal European setting, and then the surface is just highly polished, but that black cast to the glass, it challenges one's reflection. You don't see yourself as yourself. The color is changed when you see into the mirror.
So everything you used to have out is probably still on display because you have more space.
There are visitor favorites like the Dan Flavin still on view. I've reinstalled the Robert Irwin, which hasn't been on view for quite a while.
What does that look like?
It's a disc that is installed on the wall, but it comes out slightly and then it's lit in a way that creates shadows, and then the piece appears to hover and the shadows kind of complete the composition on the wall. And Irwin was a big figure in the what's called the California Light and Space Movement. And those artists were interested in using light and perception as the material for their work. Mm-hmm. We're in the brand new contemporary art gallery devoted to installations and large-scale works, the Krumpacker Center. And the work that we're viewing is by Swiss artist Pippolotti Rist. It's a room filled with beds and screens that hang from the ceiling that show a kind of watery environment. The camera, it was filmed in a lake, and the sense of floating in the environment is what Pippolotti was interested in, folks kind of coming in and suspending their senses and experience the sense of weightlessness.
There are 14 beds here, and you can lie down or a cushion. The carpet is sort of cloud-shaped. The screens on the ceiling are sort of organic splashes of water shapes.
Yeah.
And she's working in reference to Monet in a way.
Yeah, Monet's water lily paintings inspired this piece in part. She once called the work Monet's Water Lilies from the Other Side. So if you could kind of jump into the painting and swim through that pond would be the kind of feeling that you get here in the room. The beds are like rafts that you can lay on and look up at the screen and become immersed in this kind of watery film. She invites you to come in and make yourself at home, take off your shoes and lay down on the bed and just really become, let yourself dissolve into the environment.
Mm-hmm. It's like the giant 8K video screen downstairs outside the Witzel, the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of these big modern spaces that we didn't really have in Portland before.
Right.
And it feels like more like a big city museum now.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, we have some large spaces in Portland, but we just didn't have a big, large space like this at the museum. So it's really exciting to inaugurate this beautiful gallery, which has high ceilings, and it's just a nice volume that can contain works that are expansive and immersive, like this work by Pippolotti Rist.
And I feel that the whole place, everything I've seen today, encourages you to linger, sit down, you know, just don't rush through and look at paintings and leave kind of burnt out.
Yeah, that's a great observation. Yeah, we wanted people to come in and feel a sense of connection. You can come into the glass pavilion and look out and see the park blocks. There's that sense of connectivity with nature and art spaces. And yeah, we hope folks will come in and kind of slow down and take time to reflect and to kind of connect with one another when they come to the museum.
What is this music that goes with the Pipilotti wrist?
It's an artist who goes by the name Soap and Skin. Her name's Anya Plaschig. So there are two songs of hers that play in the installation. You can find her out there online, so check her out.
We're going to get used to this.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Thanks. Appreciate it. Congratulations.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Number five, the European and American pre-1930 art rehang. I had the curator Lloyd DeWitt on Art Focus earlier this year. He was talking about the way they've reordered the European and American art, and that principle applies to many of the shows now. So they're in thematic groups. It's not just boring old chronological. They'll pick an idea and show how different artists related to it. And I talked to Lloyd DeWitt and he told me what he's excited about for the new opening.
Lloyd DeWitt, and I am the Geary Curator of European and American Art before 1930. And what I love about the new space is how humane it is. It's human scale. It is soft and it's friendly and welcoming, and I think the sense of light is just so enveloping. And the wood interior here, I think, also gives a sense of nature and softness. And from there, you can just flow into all these different galleries, so these clear passageways. And we really loved, of course, reinstalling our European galleries with in a more thematic way. And you'll see that there's a kind of consistent approach throughout all the galleries because we all work together to kind of create a sense of unity across the entire museum. But so there are a lot of dramatic experiences, especially the new video art and installations, I think, really kind of jar you into a new kind of reality. And that's so exciting about this new Portland Art Museum. So
Lloyd, you already rehung the European Gallery. Yeah. I had you on a show talking about it. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that people will see new now this is opening?
The entire Crest Gift has been reinstalled for the first time, and you get to see sort of how our old master collection was really built from the very beginning. And I think it was briefly introduced that when it came here in the 50s, but then when the additions came, we didn't celebrate that. And now, finally, decades later, we can have a look at what philanthropy really means and how it jump-started our collection to really be this kind of global collection to connect the world.
When you were on the show, it wasn't open. We peeped in.
Yeah,
and the idea was you were contrasting contemporary works with the piece from the collection.
Yes, we also have and what we're highlighting there is the continuity of philanthropy that great gift jump-started collecting and donating to the museum, something that continues to this day. But it was because of this seminal gift that really created an identity for the museum as having this global reach and this historical reach. And without that kind of generosity, you really just don't have a kind of collection that speaks to our community.
Thank you, Lloyd.
Well, good. And congratulations also to our community.
Number six, Mark Rothko and the Brand of Portland. So Rothko moved here with his family from Latvia in the 19-teens and went to Portland High School, went to the museum school, studied a bit of art, and he left for New York. The exhibit here shows all the different phases he went through. He had a Picasso phase, he had a landscape phase, he had a Pollock phase before he settled on abstract expressionism. And Brian Fariso, the director of the Portland Art Museum, explained it thus, that by taking away all the usual visual cues we have in a painting, such as things we recognize, and making us just focus on large rectangles of colors, it forces the viewer to look inwards and to contemplate their own spirituality and their own consciousness. And that was a big break in the world of painting. And that's why Rothko is so important. Whether people get Rothko or not is another thing. It's difficult work. People say it's very rewarding if you stare at it for a long time. Generally, people look at paintings for less than 20 seconds in large, busy galleries. So who knows, will Rothko become part of the image of Portland, part of our brand? Maybe it'll be like Elliot Smith, kind of dour, introspective artist that people really relate to. Number 7, the Education Center at the Portland Art Museum. So school trips are free, and there are always kids trailing through the museum, and that's a good thing, I think. And the Education Center, which used to be a little box of a room down by the Witzel, where you could go in and do some, you know, bit of crafting, that has all changed. It's become this big, almost like a classroom. It's a nice room, big glass window. One side is one big glass wall, and all the computers are hidden, so it's just a row of little desks. And there are places where teachers can talk to the kids, and there are art supplies and computers where kids and adults can make things. It's part of the idea of making museums a bit more hands-on and making it more efficient for school kids to come and go through the museum. I talked to the director of learning there, Stephanie Parrish, and here's what she had to say about the new era at the Portland Art Museum.
So I'm Stephanie Parrish. I'm the director of learning.
So that, I think of that as, you know, you bring your kids to the museum and keep them busy doing collage or something. That's how it used to be. What is it now? You have a new space and more people teaching kids.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still that. I mean, I think museums for over 150 years have been places where kids come, and there's part of our mission is a learning mission, education mission. But learning is so much more now. You know, the idea that learning happens in all corners of the museum. So there are spaces in our Native American galleries. There are spaces in our Black Art and Experiences galleries where people can sit and learn and make, that will be activated with programs. So you'll see them more, these spaces more and more throughout the Portland Art Museum. Downstairs on the lower level, we have a permanent dedicated studio space and a gallery space for youth and community art. So we've never had a permanent space, so we host performances in the ballrooms, and then we host the visual arts exhibition here too. Usually it's like a 2-week exhibition, and now we're going to have a permanent space. We'll be able to keep it up for several months. Mm-hmm. So people can come for a more extended period, and we can program around it in more, you know, like robust ways. So I think it's really important for people, especially young folks, to see themselves in the museum. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not just static art that hangs on the wall. It's ever-changing, and we need more young artists in the mm-hmm. world. So I hope that our walls can bear some of that. I think increasingly you see it's this idea of wanting people to see themselves, to leave a little bit behind, to linger longer. You know, museums have trained people to look at works of art for like 20 seconds, right? I think the average museum visitor, research has shown, spends about 20 to 25 seconds mm-hmm. looking at a work of art. So what if you create spaces that are really invite people, like they're designed, you know, to have a little time to process, to reflect, and then maybe you'll leave the space thinking a little differently about something, or that a museum space shouldn't be just a place of display, but a place of production, I think, where we can like think new ideas and talk to our neighbors, and that museum spaces, I think, are ever-changing. And so I do hope that you will continue to see spaces activated in new ways here. You'll see performances in the galleries. You'll see poetry, mm-hmm. writing. Last weekend, we hosted Bookfest mm-hmm. with pop-up authors, you know, all over the museum. That is not new. That is stuff we've been doing for a long time. But now we have beautiful new spaces, I think, that will that connect to the outside, too, these glass spaces. So you can feel a sense of how art is, you know, both something you can have here inside of a museum, but it's out in the world all around us. So how do you create those connections?
I took my daughter when she was little here to the kids section. And she did her first monoprint of it, like a little rainbow with a stick figure. She now has a BFA in art.
Exactly.
But that old space was kind of squeezed in by the width. So where is your new space?
So today, when you come to the museum, on the lower level, there is still, you know, a new studio space that, instead of being, you know, behind a solid door, there's a beautiful glass window that creates transparency between the studio space and the gallery space.
What floor?
On the lower level, so floor zero.
Thank you, Stephanie. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Number eight, Brian Fariso. Brian has been the director at the Portland Art Museum for 20 years, and he's credited with turning around the finances of the museum, making it more stable, hiring curators, endowing them, and just making sure that the museum has become less kind of clubby and old-fashioned and more open to the community. And Brian is leaving, and he's going to be the director of the Dallas Museum of Art in Texas starting December the 1st. So good luck, Brian. Thank you. Number nine. The Belushi Building from 1932 and the Mark Building from 1924 are now rebranded as the South and North Wings. So the whole museum is now oriented on the compass. There's a west entrance and the east entrance, and it should be a lot easier to find your way around, which is a good thing. Those two buildings used to be connected by a tunnel, and many people didn't even know about it and totally missed the modern collection, which was and still is housed in the old Mark Building or North Wing. And finally, number 10 in 10 things you need to know about the newly reopened Portland Art Museum. The whole place feels a lot nicer. The light and air you get with the new Rothko Pavilion is really enticing. There are new tall ceilings, white walls, all the old levels of floors that didn't really connect have been connected with ramps and elevators, and there are nice touches like all gender bathrooms. They have revamped the Native American collection, and they've added a Black Art and Experiences permanent gallery, which is interesting at a time when everyone's running shy of DEI under pressure from the government. This institution is standing its ground and producing what it thinks is good for Portland, and that's a brave thing in this day and age. I hope you'll visit. I will, and it should be a place with lots going on and where you feel comfortable hanging out for the whole day. I'd like to thank my guests this week, who were Sarah Krajewski, Lloyd DeWitt, and Stephanie Parrish of the Portland Art Museum. And let's play it out with some more of Pippolotti Wrist's musical friend, Soap and Skin. Thank you.
Thank you.